This is Jim Inkster coming today on Talk Louisiana. We'll start with State Representative Steve Carter. He'll comment on the special session opening today as the fiscal cliff is in the offing, 40 days away from D-Day, if something is not done. We'll get the prognosis from Stephen Frank Carter, State Representative from District 68. Also, Steve Carter is a former Associate Athletic Director at Louisiana State University, and the town is still abuzz about the loss of Heisman Trophy winner Billy Cannon, LSU's greatest athletic icon, died Sunday at the age of 80. And we'll hear Billy Cannon from this show on the anniversary of the run. He was here on the 50th anniversary in 2009. And Charlie D. Gravel, who wrote the definitive biography about Billy Cannon, A Long, Long Run, is also with us. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana and for listening to WRKF. Your number is 877-217-5757 and locally 297-5633. Our email is talk@talklouisiana.org. Becca Dill is producing today, and our leadoff guest is Steve Carter, who's had quite a life. And the last 11 years, he's been the state rep for District 68 here in Baton Rouge, a district that includes the LSU area, and he's been in a few sessions. Have you counted all the special sessions you've been in over the last 11 years?
A lot. I really haven't. They sort of roll together, to be honest with you. In 11 years, I don't think I've had any time off. It is
a full-time job.
It really is.
And we've talked about this before. Steve won his election over Kyle Ardoin by 87 votes, 49-67 to 48-80 when he was elected in, 2007. And now that Ardoin's Secretary of State, I think he may ask for a recount.
I don't know. I saw him the other night. We laughed about it a little bit, and he said, I don't think I want to switch places with you. And I said, okay.
But this fiscal cliff is 40 days away. It's serious stuff, and is this the time something will get done, or are we still possibly going to have an impasse?
Well, you know, Jim, like you said, I've been in 11 years, and it's really frustrating. And the reason I say it's frustrating, because when we went in, there were 61 of us new in the House out of 105 that went in due to term limits. And, of course, Bobby Jindal had just been elected governor, and everybody's excited about reforming the state, making things better, making this the greatest state of all time. And in my opinion, we're still right back where we still haven't made a move. We're still right back where every area that's bad, we're number one, and every area that's good, we're last. I mean, it's just sad, and it's frustrating. And the thing that's really frustrating to me is that we don't communicate like we should. I mean, here we've been there with the first special session that ended, you know, just ended, and then we've been there for another, 60 days, 80 days, whatever, but we've been there, and we really haven't gotten together and chatted. I would think that the governor would bring a few people together and say, listen, we're at this fiscal cliff. It's time for us to make a move. Y'all come talk to each other. I'll send my people in. We'll visit a little bit, and let's come up with a consensus so as soon as this session ends, we can go right into the special session and solve the problem. And that has not happened. And if you look at the paper today, there are only two bills that have been filed so far for the special session. So to me, it's very, very frustrating. Our leadership, both with the governor and also with some of the members of the House, it's just I don't understand what we're doing. And I'm part of it, so I got to take blame too. But it is really frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have been in the House 11 years. The last three, two and a half, with John Bel Edwards, who you actually were elected same day in 2007. He was one of the 61 new members, and he's in the opposition party. So it would not be expected for you to be bosom buddies, but do you ever meet with him personally? Has that happened in the course of the two and a half
years? It's happened twice. Should have happened a third time. He invited, to his credit, a few of the members of the House over to the mansion to visit and have dinner. They had one meeting, and I understand it was pretty good. They had another meeting scheduled, but something came up, and I was part of that. It was canceled. And the next time they had the scheduled meeting, I had something scheduled, so I did not go. So it's not really his fault. But I still think that he knows a lot of us because he was part of us. And it seems to me like he would have done a better job of bringing us together and chatting and talking. And I understand we're differing philosophically, but he's a good guy. He understands what's going on, and I know he wants to do the right thing. But philosophically, you've got the Republicans on one mm-hmm. side saying where we think we should go, and, of course, he's on the other side. But he knows the people. He knows the system. It's not like he's, you know, brand new. He fought the good fight for 8 years. So it is a little strange that we haven't gotten together and talked as much as we should have, but I can't blame him because, like I said, he tried to do it one time, and I just wasn't available to go.
877-217-5757 for Steve Carter, State Representative, Republican from Baton Rouge, and we'll go to the phones in a moment. But there are members of your party who will not vote for any tax increase at all. You have picked and chosen, mostly voting against, but occasionally, in fact, you were even the sponsor of a gas tax. With that as the backdrop, is it hard to get anything done?
Well, yes and no. I mean, in the last special session, they had two tax increases of which I voted for because I thought it was the right thing to do, mainly because LSU is in my district and LSU needed the dollars as higher education did. So I voted for it. Of course, my two main passions are education and transportation. And that's why I filed the gasoline tax. I don't have a problem really, you know, voting for some things that are really necessary. I mean, we're behind $17 billion in infrastructure. We've got to find some dollars somewhere to make some things happen. So it's not that I'm anti-tax. There are some people that up there that are anti-tax, and to bring them together, but it can be done.
All right. 877-217-5757 or talk at talklouisiana.org. And a listener asks about the prospect of a half penny being renewed. This seems to be what is most likely to occur. Is that something that you can live with?
Yes, but I don't want to make it permanent, and I'll tell you why. We've got to solve the problem. You know, we had the discussion of a constitutional convention, which I'm very much in favor of, but there's always a stumbling block. There's a problem. And, you know, one minute it's because they don't like the delegates that are there. They don't like the topics that we're selecting based on the articles that are in their constitution. So in answer to your question, I would, because it's necessary. We've got to do something, but I do not want to vote for, and I'm saying this, and I may have to get my arm twisted. I may have to vote for it, but I'd rather not vote for it to be permanent.
Does it take 70 votes?
Yes. And that's difficult sometimes, and that's where we ran into a problem. I mean, you've got various factions up there. You've got the Black Caucus who has their feelings and what they want, and they're very powerful and they're very good. And, of course, you have the Democrats as part of the Black Caucus. Mm-hmm. The Black Caucus is part of them. And then you have the Republicans, and within the Republicans you've got, as you said before, a few that just will not vote for taxes. So to get to 70 is sometimes very difficult, but you've got to. That's part of the process. You've got to visit with people, talk to people, help people, and make this a better state for our citizens.
Jim in Greenville Springs. Jim, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Representative Steve Carter.
Morning, gentlemen. I'm mad. I'm really upset, and I will tell you that I'm upset at both parties. So I'm not going to single out any specific party, but y'all did this. You personally did this to this state and to us, okay? You spent money that was one-time use and pretended it was recurring. You allowed Bobby Jindal to sit there and shuffle around money so he could have a two-week run at the presidency and pretend he had a balanced budget.
Your thoughts, Steve Carter.
Well, he's accurate. I'll take part of the blame for it, too, because I'm one of the 505 that are there plus within the Senate. But again, it's not as easy as people think sometimes. I mean, it is very difficult. And part of the problem is from a priority standpoint. What is the priority of this state? Is it infrastructure? Is it health? Is it higher education? Is it TOPS? What is it? And you just can't fund everything. We do have a large budget, in my opinion. We're at $30 or $31 billion, and that's a lot of money. The problem we have is that mm-hmm. of the state dollars that we can fool with whenever we do have a deficit or have a problem is limited because everything else is dedicated. And that's why I'd like us to try to, you know, have a constitutional convention to do some things that allow us to move some money around and help people. But we're limited in what we can do at times.
Thank you, Jim. Ray in Prairieville. Hi, Ray. You're on Talk Louisiana with Steve Carter.
Thanks for taking my call, Jim. Good to hear Mr. Carter and his approach, by the way, if a Republican. I'm glad to hear that he would have voted in favor of the 30-cent a gallon gas tax. I think that was essential for improving roads and especially getting a bypass road. But on the budget, I'd like to hear his comment about whether we could renew the Steli plant.
We were talking about that last night. If it were brought up, we would vote on it. It has not been brought up, to be honest with you. We got rid, which, you know, being visionary in this business is the route to go. And, of course, if we recognize the fact that there would have be a recession and we would have a revenue problem, we would not have eliminated Steli. But at the time, we were pretty flush with dollars, and so we thought that was the best thing to do to give our citizens a tax break. So to bring it back, they've talked about it. I thought that they may have a bill filed a couple of years ago to bring it back. But thus far, nobody has filed a bill. So until someone files a bill and we have to determine what we're going to do, you know, obviously we won't have to vote on it.
And one of those who voted to get rid of Steli back in 2008 was none other than John Bel Edwards. A listener asked about this fight at the River Room, the rumble at the River Room. That was the talk of the Capitol last week, wasn't it?
And it's sad. Both of those two gentlemen are really good guys. Stuart's unbelievable. Stuart Bishop, right. And both of them are chairman of Natural Resources. I don't think it's called Natural Resources in the Senate, but they just had a disagreement, and you know, they happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time, and things occurred.
But nobody was hurt, no. So the beat goes on. 877-217-5757. Later, Charlie D. Gravel, the biographer of Billy Cannon, and more with Steve Carter. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Becca Dill is producing. Later, we'll hear from Charlie D. Gravel, the biographer of Billy Cannon, who died Sunday, age 80. Services for Dr. Cannon will be tomorrow at the Pete Maravich Assembly Center. 2 p.m. funeral, visitation before. And if you'd like to talk to Steve Carter, former LSU Associate Athletic Director, in our time with him, he can talk about Billy Cannon. He can talk about what's going on at the Capitol. He is term limited, and there is speculation about your next move. You have any thoughts about what comes next?
Really don't know, to be honest with you. I enjoy what I'm doing. I tell my aide, my wife, this quite often. I mean, I've been in there for 11 years. I don't think I've accomplished what I really wanted to accomplish. I feel guilty about my passion's early childhood, and I've had a couple of bills. I just can't quite get over the hump because, from a monetary standpoint, I figure out different ways to try to get the dollars to go into early childhood, and I fail there. And the transportation, I had the gasoline tax, and we didn't make that. And so there's still some things I'd like to do. So my options are open. I'm going to wait and see where I am.
You're not ruling out running for the Senate?
Not really, but Franklin Foyle's a very good friend of mine. He's interested in doing it, and I don't know what I'm going to do, to be honest with you.
877-217-5757 for Representative Carter. And let's see, Becca, let's try to get Dan downtown. There we go. Dan, you're on the air with Representative Steve Carter.
Yeah, Representative Carter, is the hold that the lobbyists and their campaign donations have over the majority of Republican legislators such that ordinary citizens will just have to do without adequate health care and education rather than make corporate Louisiana pay its fair share in taxes?
Well, you know, initially, before I got involved in politics, I honestly, to be honest with you, I thought that your lobbyist was a bad word. But really, they're not like what people make them out to be. They're there for a reason. They provide information. They help an awful lot with certain bills. Do they have an opinion? Obviously, because they work for someone. But they do not strong arm. They do not go and go to fundraisers and try to buy legislators off. They simply are there to provide information. You don't have to listen to them if you don't want to. They send information out, and they do a pretty good job. And 12 years ago, I would not have said that. But they're good lobbyists. I've never had anyone threaten me. I've never had anyone, you know, say that, hey, I gave you a campaign contribution, so consequently you've got to vote this way. They just basically provide information and try to help you make an informed decision.
Here's an observation from Steve Winham, former budget director in St. Francisville. He says, since 95% of the general fund dedicated by the Constitution is the MFP and general obligation debt service, and we wouldn't want to cut either of those, what other dedicated funds would Steve Carter cut?
Well, that's a good question. There's so many of them that are dedicated. I'd have to have a list, and I'd have to try to prioritize it. But we do need to take a long, hard look. In fact, there was a bill this session of which Sharon Hewitt, who is a senator, and also Rick Edmonds, who's a rep, had combined to form a task force to study just what you're talking about. And they came back with some pretty good recommendations. But as you well know, when you get into dedications and you get into a situation where you've got to say that we're going to eliminate this particular dedication, there's someone out there that got that dedication that believes in it, and it's very difficult sometimes to eliminate. But we need to take a long, hard look. You know, Buddy Romer back when, and you know this, his stat debts, when they were in deep financial trouble, he just wiped them all out one day with an executive order. And you have to start anew. And that may be what we need to do. It's when our hands are tied and we have a deficit, as you know, we can only delve with higher ed and hospitals and health. And that makes it tough when you've got a sizable deficit and everything is protected and you just can't fool with anything but higher ed and health.
Now, despite the budget problems, which have been immense, when you look at LSU, there is massive construction going on in these beautiful buildings. A lot of them, of course, are student housing, and many believe they're built on the backs or the back of Tops. Tops has been preserved. How important is that program not only to the students who are the beneficiaries, but to the economy of your district?
Yeah. It's Tops is very good, as you read in the paper this morning, where, I mean, it's virtually it's untouchable. But, you know, Jim, you take a look at Tops, and Tops does a good job. Do we need to tweak some things? Yes. Is it tough to tweak them? Yes. Should the GPA be raised? I personally think it should be. But the problem you have is, look at Alabama. Alabama has no Tops, to my knowledge. Yet they'll come in here, and they'll take the top kids in our city or in our state and other states, and they'll give them a four-year education full ride to go to the University of Alabama. Now, I'm not sure where the dollars are coming from for them to do that. Ours is more of a broad-based, where we give dollars to a lot of people. And that's healthy and that's good, and the graduation rates of the people that have Tops is very high. So we do a good job. The question is, how many of those kids are staying in our state? Now, granted, they may not be a position available. That could happen. But we need to ensure that Tops has also helped with, because of the core curriculum that you have to take, it's helped with getting kids to take the right classes to graduate. And they also have to make sure that they maintain a certain grade point average and have a certain ATC score. So it does some good. But it's very difficult for us to sustain it, because it's a sizable amount of money for us to take care of the youngsters of this state. Is it the right thing to do? Yes, but does it need to be tweaked? I think it should be.
Okay, here's observation from a listener, Brooke, about the decision by the legislature to send the constitutional amendment for unanimous juries to the vote of the people. We, as an electorate, will vote on this fall, but that was a surprise move. It got through both chambers with flying colors. How did you vote on that one?
I voted yes, and I thought it was the right thing to do. But I'll tell you what's interesting about it. If you read the editorial today about J.P. Morrell in the paper, J.P.'s a pretty doggone good legislator. He has a cross-section of things that he thinks are important. He did a good job, obviously, in getting it through the Senate, and he did a real masterful job of getting Sherman Mack to be the person who presented it on the floor. Sherman initially was not for the bill, but J.P. called him, talked to him, massaged him, and according to Sherman, he asked him to do some things, of which he prayed the night before and recognized the fact it was the right thing to do. Sherman is very respected, made a very good presentation on the floor, And I'm not so sure that it didn't come close to sailing out of there with very few people who voted against. I'm not sure the exact vote, but I know that it passed by a sizable margin.
I've seen Steve Carter at town hall meetings outside his district about crime, and the front page of the Advocate today, three killings push East Baton Rouge is 2018 total to 35. 35 homicides, and we're not through May. We could unfortunately have a record year.
It's really sad. I don't understand how it happens. Again, this is just my philosophy, is that if you educate people and you recognize the fact that you love people and being alive in this great country and this great state is a privilege and is something that you should enjoy doing. It goes back to education, in my opinion. I still think that early childhood is important. It takes a while for the cycle to work, but it's sad. I'm not sure what the solution is. I thought Brave did a very good job. I think that the new chief and the mayor, it's a priority, and we just have got to get to the bottom line and find out what the heck is causing all of this, because it's just sad for people to take other people's lives, because we're privileged to have an opportunity to be in a great country and a great state. And I know the fact that I've had a great life is due to the fact that I'm educated. And I just think that we need to continue to work hard on our educational system and get youngsters at an early age to give them the opportunity to start school and be on a level playing field.
Is there any chance you'll run for mayor?
I hadn't even thought about it, but I don't know what I'm going to do, to be honest with you.
Well,
I'm not sure what I'm going to do when I leave out of here.
You've got a lot of options, and once that political bug bites, very few, as some say, they either leave by the ballot box or the pine box.
Yeah, you're right. That's true. I may be by the pine box.
877-217-5757 is your number. We'll spend a few more minutes with Representative Steve Carter if you'd like to get in under the wire with him, and then we'll hear from Charlie D. Gravel. He wrote the definitive biography about Billy Cannon, A Long, Long Run. Billy Cannon's funeral will be tomorrow. We'll talk about it after this news break on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Becca Dill is producing, and a few more minutes with Representative Steve Carter, and then we'll go to Charlie D. Gravel, who was a friend, associate, and biographer of the great Billy Cannon. And we often overuse that word great, but he, Billy Cannon, is quite likely LSU's greatest athletic icon. A few years ago, on the 150th anniversary of Louisiana State University, Tiger Rag had a poll of the 150 most influential people in LSU history as far as sports. And number two was Pete Maravich. Number one was Billy Cannon. 877-217-5757. Keith in Sherwood Forest. Keith, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Mr. Carter. Just want to thank you for your service to the state. I wonder if you might take a second to comment on the potential new city of St. George and what it might entail for the future of Baton Rouge if it in fact becomes a city.
That's a great question. I do not live in that area, and I do know that there are mixed reviews on whether it's good or bad. I understand the citizens, and I understand their frustration, and I understand what they're trying to do. And mainly, most of it is with the school system. But I believe that the latest tax and the fact that I have a lot of respect for Warren Drake, hopefully Warren has talked to the people there and they've worked out their differences. I know that he would rather that it not occur. And I know that a number of people within the city government would rather that it not occur. But I understand the citizens have a right, and I understand the citizens are frustrated with some things, and so we'll just have to let it play out.
John in Goodwood. Hi, John. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. Representative Carter, I heard you make a statement a while ago with regards to how many people being recruited by Alabama are actually how many of the people in TOPS are actually staying in the state. One of the things, my frustration with all this is, we lose a lot of people because we cut higher ed and we never acknowledge it and treat it as an economic development tool.
Is that fair?
You got a very good point. You're absolutely accurate. But again, as I said before, when it comes time to where we have a deficit and we're struggling with dollars and we have to find dollars, everything is dedicated but higher ed and the fact that in health. And I'm going to be honest with you. We've talked about this before amongst the legislature. We have an awful lot of four-year institutions in this state, and we're limited with the number of dollars that we have. I'm not so sure that we need to maybe try to consolidate or do some things where we can have the dollars, which we can in turn give them to institutions that are doing the right thing, like LSU. So yeah, I understand where you're coming from.
Thank you, John. Kenneth in Lafayette. Hi, Kenneth. You're on the air with Representative Carter.
Hi, Representative Carter just stated that he couldn't understand how people can't be or should be happy to be growing up in this wonderful country of ours, and that all that he had was because of his education. I beg to differ and suggest that he doesn't have a clue what it means to grow up poor and a person of color within this state.
Well, to be honest with you, and I appreciate your comment, if you'll follow an awful lot of the legislation that I've tried to pass, particularly from an education standpoint, is to help those types of people that you're talking about. I'm very supportive of vouchers, and I'm very supportive of a number of other policies that will enable the youngsters who are of color and may be poor to have an opportunity to get a good education. So I understand when you're coming through them, and I appreciate it, but I do attempt to try to do the best job that I can to help those people to have a wonderful life.
Daniel writes, all the legislature discusses is expenses. Why don't they do something about revenues? We need roads, police, everything needs to be adjusted for inflation. Leave the dedicated funds alone and get the revenue we need to move forward.
Well, that's one of the things probably we're going to be looking at in the special session. Obviously, the fiscal cliff will drop off a number of dollars, sales tax revenue, which is sizable in this state. And so I would think that probably we are going to raise some revenue in this special session, and hopefully we'll get enough dollars to where we can do the things that we need to do where the budget that we left out of the House and the Senate had some cuts in it, and hopefully we can make those cuts up.
Well, Steve Carter, before he became a lawmaker, was heavily involved in athletics in many forms. He was an outstanding tennis player of renown at LSU, and then tennis coach, and then associate athletic director. But you were a teenager when Billy Cannon was setting the world afire here in Baton Rouge. I'm sure you remember him vividly as a kid.
Well, you know, the interesting thing, you think about it, and of course I'm going to show my age now, I'll never forget when Baton Rouge High and Estruma were playing Memorial Stadium, and you could not get a ticket. I mean, you better have got a ticket weeks in advance because it was a sellout, and it was a great, great event back then. And I mean, it's amazing what he could do. I mean, not only could he run, not only could he throw, but, I mean, at the 100-yard dash in the SEC, he would do what he needed to do, and he would win at record times. And not only that, but he didn't turn back around and throw the shot put. Now, how many people can do that? Now, I mean, this day and time, I know there are a lot of specialists and what have you, but for him
one.
To do the things that he did is just unbelievable.
And those numbers that he achieved in those days, they stand up today. He bench pressed 400 pounds. He ran the 100 yards in 9.4 at the time he did it. The world record was 9.3.
Yeah. Well, you remember the reason was with Alvin Roy. You remember nobody wanted to lift weights back then. And Alvin Roy got a few people, including Billy, and they would go to that little house
Bob
over
Pettit.
There. Bob Pettit. And go over that little house over there or whatever.
Oklahoma
Street. And that's where he did his work.
That
and,
magic, isn't that
yep,
something?
It was
a few years ago, they tore that building
down. Yeah, I know. I was saying, should
tragic,
be a historical
tragic.
Building.
Very much so. Well, Steve Carter, thank you, and let's keep in touch.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
We're joined now by Charlie D. Gravel, who, as mentioned, not only was the biographer of Billy Cannon a few years ago with an excellent book, A Long, Long Run, that covers ground never covered before. And Cannon, of course, was quite open about his varied past, which included some things that were not so pleasant. But Charlie spent over 29 years ministering to inmates at the Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola, including the men on death row. And Billy Cannon, as we know, was the dentist for Angola. And Charlie D. Gravel, I'm sure it took a lot of coaxing to get him to comply with this book.
Yeah, that was not an easy deal. I think when Billy sort of turned a corner on telling his story, his first idea was that he was going to tell about his athletics. Certainly understandable. When I got asked to do the book, my response was, yes, of course we'll cover this stellar athletic career, but if I'm going to write it, we're going to have to tell the whole story, warts and all. And he wasn't so sure about that. It took him a couple of days to think about it, and he came back and said, let's do it.
Well, he sat right in the same chair you are now a few years ago. You were with him, and I remember him saying, he said, let's face it, when I was a kid, I was a thug.
You know, that's hard words, and it's really a testament to the kind of character he had that he could look back at his past and admit in very frank terms the kind of things that he did, how stupid they were, how wrong they were.
Well, and his problems, as we know, they stopped for a while, and then after his athletic career was over at the age almost 46 years old, he was busted for counterfeiting, and he acknowledged he made a terrible mistake. I'm not sure there was a jury in Baton Rouge that would have convicted him on that, but he took his medicine.
He did. He didn't have to go before a jury, and he didn't have to go, well, he went before a judge, Judge Frank Polozola. But he admitted his guilt right off the bat, and he cooperated with the Secret Service in busting the whole scheme open.
Well, in 2009, on the 50th anniversary of the run, the 89-yard run to beat Ole Miss in 1959, the 50th anniversary, he was on this show, and he talked openly about the mistake he made 35 years ago. This summer is when the world found out that Billy Cannon was involved in a counterfeiting operation. Here's how Billy Cannon described his fall from grace.
Well, I don't know if anyone has had more highs and lows than you in one life, and 1983 was not a good year.
Jim, it was like my old daddy used to say, it's not how high the peak or how low the valley, it's how far across this valley we're in. And I've thought of that many, many times since 83.
When you think back on that, are there moments when you think, my goodness, how did I get myself into this?
No, not really. It's a thing of past. It's something that I did. I'm not very proud of it. But would I try to sweep it under a carpet and say it didn't happen or that I was innocent? No, that's not a case in fact. And I think I've handled it as well as I can handle it. I think my family's handled it well.
Well, in 2010, 1 year later, he was named the LSU Alumnus of the Year by the Alumni Association, and he lived a life that was exemplary after 1983 and made many new friends along the way, many people who were largely unaware of his athletic prowess. And Charlie D. Gravel, he didn't shy from talking about his foibles. And as you know, even during that time in 1983, as you covered in the book, A Long, Long Run, he kept his sense of humor, particularly when a good friend, Boots Garland, came to see him.
Yeah, he and Boots were two of a kind. They were both very, very witty folks and good friends. And after he was busted for counterfeiting, I don't imagine you could get any lower. And Boots knocked on the door, and Dot, Billy's wife, let him in. Billy was sitting on the living room floor with his head hung between his legs, just as low as you could get. And Boots told him, what can I do for you? And Billy said, do you have change for $100? And, of course, it was $100 bills that he had counterfeited. So not for a moment did he lose his wit as low as he was.
Well, he was a very smart man, a doctor, as we know, and a lot of smart people like Billy Cannon have great senses of humor, and he did. And we'll talk about that and more with Charlie D. Gravel after this pause on WRKN. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Charlie D. Gravel is with us, who spent 29 years at Angola as a minister to inmates. And Billy Cannon, he never went to Angola as an inmate, but he did go to a federal facility in Texas and spent almost 3 years there as a result of a counterfeiting operation. But long before that, the legend of Billy Cannon was a legend like no other in the history of Baton Rouge or Louisiana. He is an icon, the only Heisman Trophy winner the university has produced, and the only player whose number will never be worn again, number 20. And for those who lived through this, I was a kid in New Orleans, and I have vague memories of Billy Cannon as a young man. But if you were living in Baton Rouge and you were a certain age, it was hard to be part of the city's culture without knowing about the kid who was born in Philadelphia, Mississippi, who made his hometown famous in the late 1950s. And there was even a song, had to be a song, about Billy Cannon from Jay Chevalier.
Down in the South where they say you are, there's a man known as Mr. Football, Billy Cannon. Billy Cannon. Look out. There goes Billy Cannon. You can go to the East, you can go to the West, but everywhere you go, they say he's the best, Billy Cannon. Billy Cannon.
Funeral services tomorrow at 2 o'clock, with visitation before at the Pete Maravich Assembly Center, open to the public. So there will be thousands of people, young and old, of all ages, Charlie, who will be there to say goodbye to number 20.
And if folks want to have a chance to greet the family, there will be visitation starting at 12 o'clock. And so you can come in and say hello to Dot and the children, the five kids. They'll all be there. And they would be glad to greet you. Billy had so many friends over this long and illustrious career. I know lots of people would like to say goodbye to him.
Billy Cannon, A Long, Long Run from Charlie D. Gravel, is still in print and available. And it was an amazing work because it came shortly before Cannon's death, and he told stories, good and bad, that have never been told before, at least not publicly. And it's all here on the printed page, and people would sit and wait for hours to get an autograph from him, an autographed copy of the book. It reminded me of the Edwin Edwards tour when he and Leo Honeycutt collaborated on a book.
I can imagine, another Louisiana icon. But people would wait for hours, and very impatiently, as Billy talked with patience to each person who came in front of him. And people were angry until they had the turn to talk to Billy Cannon, and he turned his total attention on them and listened one more time to where someone was on the night of the Halloween run, and enjoyed it as much as every other time he's heard that story. And they walked away just 10 feet off the ground because he was just a truly charismatic person.
Oh, yeah. He was saturated with charisma and had a excellent professional career too. And to put it in perspective, in 1961, when he was playing for the Houston Oilers, a team that won three titles in the old AFL with him as their star, he ran for 330 yards from scrimmage, ran and caught 216 yards rushing, 114 yards receiving. That is still a professional football record that stands to this day. And this day is 57 years later. He still holds the record for most yards from scrimmage from a running back.
It's amazing. And had he not hurt his back in his third year with the Oilers, he would no doubt be in the in the Hall of Fame for the NFL. He was unfortunately injured, but it did not stop him. He ended up at Oakland as a tight end and really redefined the role of tight end in professional football, and became a an all-pro tight end. He didn't have the lateral moves that he had before he was injured, but he could outrun the secondary. He could get behind him, and suddenly tight ends everywhere beginning to catch long passes, and Billy Cannon set the mold on that.
He did, and he came back home and had some good years, and as we know, some bad years, but he fessed up, did his time, and then came back again. And when he came back again, as you would expect, there were some people who welcomed him with open arms and others who were not happy about what he had done. But he took it as it came.
Well, he did. It was he was pretty much a recluse in the early years after his release. But with good friends like Boots Garland and others, he gradually began to come out into the public and realized with surprise how much people truly loved him and forgave him. I know there were exceptions to that, but overall, he was embraced and continued to be an icon and an idol.
Well, the most famous play in LSU football history and one of the most famous in college football history occurred Halloween night, 1959, Tiger Stadium. 10 minutes to go in the game between number one undefeated LSU and number four undefeated Ole Miss. And LSU is trailing 3-0 to the Rebs. And Cannon, who had been instructed not to return any punts inside the 20, broke a Paul Dietzel rule. And he took the punt at the 11-yard line, and as we know, the rest is history. Here's how it sounded in 1959.
He stands on his own 28. He gets a pass from center. He boots it and gets another nice kick away going way downfield. Billy Cannon watches it bounce. He takes it on his own 11. He comes back upfield at the 15, stumbles momentarily. He's at the 20, running hard at the 25, gets away from one man to 30. Billy Cannon raced some 89 yards for a touchdown. Listen to the cheer for Billy Cannon as he comes off the field. Great All-American.
Great All-American from J.C. Politz. Lived on Roosevelt Street, not far from campus. He and Cannon became great friends, and J.C. got he got as much mileage out of that as Billy Cannon did. And at one point, the producer was so excited, the engineer, that he turned down the microphone. You can hear it.
Yeah.
But in JC's broadcast partner was none other than Ron Gomez, who Amazing. Became a lawmaker in Lafayette, might even be listening today. But that run is one for the ages, Charlie D. Gravel.
Well, Jim, what you don't hear on that very famous piece of footage is that Paul Dietzel, when he saw that Billy was going to break the rule and take this punt on the 11-yard line, was shouting, "No, no, no." And quickly, Dietzel began to shout, "Go, go, go." And, of course, that's exactly what Billy did.
And there was a goal line stand at the end of the game to prevent Ole Miss from scoring what would have been a winning touchdown, and Cannon was involved in that.
He was the first one to hit the running back in a goal line stance. Warren Rabb was right behind him, and had they not made that goal line stance, perhaps we wouldn't remember the run.
Mm-hmm. No, that solidified the run as something that was iconic in history. And then LSU went to Tennessee and lost 14-13. A game in which Billy Cannon went in for an apparent two-point conversion. I talked with him a few months ago. He said, "I was in."
He maintained that to the end, yes.
And that would have been the second straight national title for LSU, because then national titles were awarded before bowl games, and LSU would have won two in a row if not for what Billy Cannon said was a bad call at the University of Tennessee. But the run enabled him to win the Heisman Trophy, and he got it from none other than Richard Milhouse Nixon, Vice President of the United States.
That's right, and as Billy tells the story, the Heisman Trophy is very heavy, and Nixon wasn't really strong enough to lift it. And so Billy had to help him present the trophy to Billy.
And he was generous with that trophy. I've seen it in a lot of places.
Oh, my goodness. He had a friend that was in the hospital not long after he got it, and Billy hauled this up Our Lady of the Lake Hospital several floors to get to this person's room. Yeah, Billy loved to share the trophy. And, of course, you can see it now on display at TJ Ribs, and it's a beautiful thing to behold. I've had a chance to hold it myself.
How has this hit you?
It's a remarkable man, a remarkable life, and I'm reflecting a lot on that question, Jim, since I will be doing the eulogy at tomorrow's funeral service. The family very graciously asked me to do that. As we were talking yesterday in preparation for the funeral, his oldest daughter, Terry, said he was a simple man. And I said, maybe that's the way you saw him, mm-hmm. Terry. But after I had interviewed him a few times, I was talking to his friend Boots Garland, and I said, "Boots, Billy Cannon is complicated." And Boots said, "You think?" He was a mm-hmm. complex individual. And today's Advocate, I don't know whether you've seen the editorial today, but it's on Billy. And they say Billy Cannon was a sprinter, but he was also a marathon runner because the distance race that he ran was the race he ran as a man. And as wonderful as his athletics were, in my opinion, in my personal opinion, his journey as a man was every bit as good.
Thank you, Charlie D. Gravel. And tomorrow, Charlie will be eulogizing his friend, 2 o'clock, Assembly Center. Thanks for listening. We're back tomorrow, same time, same place. Stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.